This is evolutionary.org radio raw podcast. This is your host, Steve Smee. My co-host, the Mason, he has a hockey tournament this weekend, so he wasn't able to join us for this. But I do have a special guest. Lauren Lockman is joining us. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm doing great, thanks, Steve. How about you?
Thanks, buddy. We had Lauren on our regular podcast about a week ago. It's published. You guys can go on our website and take a look at it. But his internet connection had some issues, and we didn't really have enough time to really dig into things. So I wanted to bring him back because fasting is something that, we all should be doing in the fitness community, and it's really starting to catch on now. And it's really changed my life in the past couple years since I've been fasting. And you guys have seen my pictures recently on the forums. So I wanted to first, we didn't get a chance to get into this much. I found out about Lauren through his YouTube page, Lauren Lockman, Lockman. You guys really need to check out that page. He's got a lot of great information on nutrition, fasting, the whole nine yards. So, Lauren, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And you have a wellness center that you operate in Central America. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys do?
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to, Steve. I'm not sure how much you want to hear about my history, my background, but I'll tell you that I started out in a completely different field. I was actually in the commercial real estate finance business, brokering mortgages on commercial properties. But I had gotten very, very sick right out of college within about 6 months, and I spent 3 years going from doctor to doctor and getting worse as a result of medical care. Finally realized that medicine wasn't helping me and decided that if I wanted my health back, I was going to have to figure it out myself. And so I'd always been very close to nature. I'd started studying nutrition at the age of 14, and this was all happening at the age of, well, about 10 years later. And so finally, at the age of 26, about 3 years in, I realized I was going to need to walk away from medicine. And I did. I walked away from medicine. I've never looked back. I have spent zero money on medical care, with the exception of trauma. I've broken some bones. I've had some accidents. I had those kinds of things where you need to go to the emergency room. And trauma medicine has saved my life on more than one occasion. But in terms of treating disease, et cetera, sicknesses, whatever, as far as I'm concerned, medicine is practically useless because it's built on, the entire premise is built on a faulty premise, which is that we can give the body toxic substances in order to make it heal. And it simply doesn't happen. In fact, I mean, medicine, it's not really true because they don't even pretend it makes you heal. For instance, with hypertension, which is a very common condition, high blood pressure, medicine doctors will tell you that you will need to take these drugs for the rest of your life. It's not going to make you better. They're telling you that. It's just going to treat the symptoms. It's going to make it easier to live with. And the crazy thing is, in the 21 years that I've run the Tanglewood Wellness Center, we have worked with some 300 plus hypertensive clients, and every single one of them has healed completely. No hypertension, no need for drugs. So in 30 years, I'll back up just a second. About 4.5 months ago, we were closed at the time. I'd gotten home. It was late in the evening. My staff was gone for the day. My key broke off in the front door lock, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get in? It's the only key I had. And so I went around the back. Now, we have a 7 month rainy season and a 5 month dry season. The rainy season, it's usually beautiful every morning, and then it rains in the afternoon, evening. So I'm coming home at 6 o'clock in the evening. It's drizzling. I'm in my shorts and flip flops as always. I'm in Costa Rica. It's always beautiful where I live, and the temperature. So I climbed on top of the wall. It's 2.2 meters, about 8 feet high. I turned around to come down, using my hands on the top of the wall, but I slipped because it was wet, and I landed on my back on a patio, on actually a concrete cover, and I thought I'd broken my back. I could barely move. I did break my right hip. My back was severely traumatized, and it took quite a while to recover from that. I fasted, of course, to recover from that. We'll talk about that. But I'm telling you this because after that happened, about on the third day, my staff encouraged me, persuaded me to go get an X-ray. I don't normally, as I said, I don't normally do medicine at all. I let my body heal itself. But I went ahead, and I mean, the very first thing I started doing was fasting, because fasting is the best way to allow the body to heal. So, but because I was still having trouble moving at all, and I thought there might be some serious damage, I went to get an x-ray, and the doctor sent me out with some painkillers, which I had no intentions of using, because I'd used no drugs whatsoever in 30 years and had no intentions of putting anything back in my body. But after 4 nights when I could not sleep at all, I was in so much pain, I decided to take one ibuprofen each of the next 3 nights. I took one to help me sleep, and that was it. That's all the drugs I've taken in 30 years, and I don't intend to take any more. And so, you know, with the exception of that, no medicine. And I, what's happened for me is I actually went from being the sickest guy I knew at 23 with chronic fatigue, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic sinusitis, systemic candida, 57 allergies. I'd become allergic to everything. I went from that to barely being able to function for several years to having gone now more than 30 years without being sick a single day. Not a cold, not a flu, not a headache. You know, some trauma, some injuries, but that's different. And you know, I'm here to say that anybody can accomplish that. So I know, you know, what you guys are about, what your program's about, isn't necessarily focused strictly. You know, I'm focused on helping people optimize their maximum potential in every area of their life. I'm not focused on bodybuilding or anything else, but you know, whatever someone wants to do, if you want to do it as well as possible, you have to be as healthy as you can be. Because if you're not, it's going to affect everything that you do.
So let's kind of get into, you know, we all want to be healthy. We've seen some bodybuilders in the past year who have dropped like flies. One guy was 26 years old. The other guy was in his mid-40s. And these guys abused the crap out of steroids, drugs.
Right.
You know, and they were taking tons of, you know, heart medication and stuff. Didn't do a thing for them. I mean, they dropped dead.
Yeah.
In their situation, it seems to me that they kind of never gave their body a chance to rest because they were so obsessed with getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
So one of the things I've learned over the years is you really need to give your body a break. And that's the way I've utilized fasting. So why does fasting work? I know we talked about in the last episode that when you fast, you're basically, when you're eating food every day, constantly, that's 50% of your energy being expelled. But when you're fasting, you give your body that 50% to kind of repair other areas. Is there more to it? Can you dumb it down a little bit for those who
sure, absolutely. And, you know, and it depends. I mean, let's first of all clarify, because if we're talking about the intermittent fasting that you're doing, right, am I correct, Steve? You're doing intermittent fasting, eating every day, but not eating for a period of time.
Well, I've done intermittent fasting. I've done 3-day fast, 5-day fast, 10-day fast, and I've done a 20-day fast. So I've done prolonged fasting and short-term fasting.
Okay, so we should probably talk about those two things separately, because
sure. You
know, when you are first of all, you know, for anybody who's here, you're probably interested in fitness and bodybuilding and becoming stronger. And fasting is a very powerful tool, because in as little as 18 hours after your last meal, your body is pumping out some ridiculous amount, like 30,000 times the normal amount of human growth hormone. So I forget the exact amount, but it's a crazy thing. What happens is, this is the youthing hormone. Your body is repairing, rebuilding, cleansing in a way that it cannot do when you're eating food. And we're talking about after only 18 hours. So people talk about intermittent fasting, that, you know, they talk about 16 hours without eating with all your meals in an 8-hour window. It's relatively easy to move that to 18. It's not that big a deal. That, you know, for me, my first meal of the day is usually between 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. My last meal is usually between 6 and 7. I've got sometimes as much as 20 hours or more, and sometimes I eat one meal a day anyway. But, you know, I'm usually between 20 and 23 hours a day without processing food. And that means there's a lot of time, and I've been doing this for 25 years, there's a lot of time for my body to recover, to heal, to cleanse, do whatever it needs to do on a daily basis. And that's a rather surface-level cleanse, because it takes 10 to 11 days for the body to get into the deepest part of the process. So what we do here at Tanglewood, my center, which turns 21 in about 6 weeks, is we take people through long, you know, relatively long, what I call therapeutic supervised water fasts. And the average length of our fast here is 26 days. That's average. I've got three people here right now who are planning to fast for 40 or 42 days. And I say planning because we never know until it happens. They could, one of them might break a fast earlier. There's one that I think probably should break her fast earlier because she's going to wind up being so skinny. It's just going to take her a while to recover. There's always benefit to going that long, but there's always a cost as well in terms of recovery time. So I don't necessarily recommend that for everyone. The other two people who are doing it are both guys. One started out at 365 pounds roughly. The other one started at maybe 370. The other one started out at about 320 pounds. And, you know, neither one of them needs to be more than 180 pounds or so. So these guys have a lot of reserves. And when I say a lot, I mean probably 4 to 6 months worth of reserves, maybe longer. There are studies that the longest recorded fast was a guy who fasted for more than a year, consuming only water. My longest client fast was 18 and a half weeks. That's 4.5 months. This was a guy who was morbidly obese. Don't try this at home. Okay. This is not something anyone should be doing without having experienced guidance.
And what was his results on that? I know it's absurd. I was just curious. What was his result?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the reason he did this was because he had stage 4 testicular cancer and was told he had a very short time to live. And he also started out with congestive heart disease. He had been morbidly obese for a long time. I mean, he was a relatively young man, around 29, but he'd been this big since he was around 14, so more than half his life. And so what happens is the heart becomes, it becomes enlarged. It's no longer capable of keeping up with its work, and they call it congestive heart failure. It's no longer doing what it needs to do. He's still alive, but his heart is failing to do its job. And so 4.5 months later, there was no sign of cancer whatsoever, not a single bit. And by the way, we've seen this result over and over again with fasts as short as 21 days, although that's less common. I had an older guy, my oldest client, in fact, came in with a tumor in his throat and fasted for 30 days. And when he was done, he got home. His son, that's 12 days of refeeding, so he was here for 6 weeks. His son rushed him to the hospital where they had the surgeon standing by waiting to remove this tumor because they were sure it must have grown. It was probably endangering his ability to breathe. And they roll him into the OR, and they can't find a tumor. It's gone.
So okay. So the science behind that is what causes the tumors and the cancer cells to shrink when you're fasting? Is that because the food is feeding the cancer, and that gives your body a chance to kind of attack it?
Yeah, well, food is feeding the cancer, but that's not really what's happening. I mean, the food is, you know, the body is still being fed when we're fasting. It's being fed on our reserves. The reason that we store body fat, we need about 2.5% of our mass to be in fat to simply to survive, because there's always some fat necessary, you know, for basic functions. But the reason we store fat beyond that, and you know, I've measured the body fat of several thousand people over the last 12 and a half years. We didn't always have the ability to do this, but for the last 12, nearly 13 years, we've been measuring body composition. And the average woman we see is probably around 30% body fat, and the average guy we see is somewhere between 20 and 25% fat, which means most people are carrying between 10 and 15 times as much fat as they need to survive, right? As you know, when a bodybuilder is competing, his body fat is very, very low.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's fine. I mean, it's not that they necessarily want to stay there, but you know, we can survive with 2.5-3% body fat. I've actually been walking around for the last 25 years or more with my body fat between 5 and 7%. It varies.
Yeah, you can see in your videos for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably around 8% right now. I like to keep it somewhere in there.
That might work better for you based on your frame size. You know, it's going to differ for each of us. For me, it's natural. I don't try to do this. It's just what happens. I've got a very small frame. My body doesn't want to carry a lot of excess weight. But in any case, the point is that we are feeding the cells, including cancer cells, when we're fasting. We're feeding it with the reserves. So why does this happen? It's not that these cancer cells starve. It's that, you know, in fact, to back up for a second, Steve, what might help to understand this better is if we understand that every single living organism, including our virtually infinitely intelligent bodies, is intended to cleanse and heal itself. We're self-cleansing, self-healing organisms. So it's said, I don't know if I can't vouch for the veracity of this statement, but it's said that every single body has cancer cells form every day. but I don't have cancer. You don't have cancer. Only 50% of the population is going to wind up with a cancer problem. Only half the population these days. How come the other half doesn't have a problem if everyone has cancer cells forming every day? Well, the answer is simple. A healthy enough immune system destroys those cancer cells as fast as they form. So what happens when we fast is we get out of the body's way and we immediately rejuvenate the immune system so it's able to do what it was always supposed to be able to do, but lost the ability to do. And this happens when we fast. So there's literally no better way to deal with cancer than by fasting. Certainly not with conventional cancer treatment. And, you know, since we're talking about this, I mean, it drives me crazy when I see people all the time. I'll tell you what's a very common thing. Breast cancer is a very common cancer for women. And we've had probably 30 women over the 20 plus years now who've come in with breast cancer. In most cases, they had breast cancer on the other side. And by the way, this applies for everyone. So it's, you know, it's okay if we're talking mostly to guys, perhaps it doesn't matter, guys or women. It doesn't have to be breast cancer. The principle is the same. In this case, what happens with breast cancer is interesting because women have two breasts. They get cancer on one side in many cases, and they get conventional treatment. It could be surgery to remove the lump or the breast. It could be radiation. It could be chemotherapy. It could be some combination of those. Or it could be some alternative treatment. There are people now using CBD oil, right, from hemp, and saying, well, you know, they're told by whoever their practitioner is, after the treatment, assuming that the tumor is gone, they're told they're healthy. No more cancer. You're good. And they're acting as if they've cured cancer by removing this tumor. And it's important to understand that the tumor is actually a symptom. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's the real question is, why did it form in the first place? Because I'll tell you what's happened over and over again. Women have come to me. They'd had cancer. They'd had it resolved through conventional means in most cases. And they were told they had a clean bill of health, but they weren't told to do anything about the underlying cause of the problem because medicine doesn't usually address that. And so what happens is 3, 4, 5 years later, they develop cancer on the other side. And they're surprised, but they shouldn't be. You know, the same thing is true with any, if you've got cancer anywhere and you deal with the symptom of the cancer, but don't do anything about the underlying cause, why did it develop? It's likely to return. And so, you know, the real bottom line, my real focus is on helping people understand and actually go through the process that allows them to cleanse and heal their body completely so there is no disease. Because disease isn't an accident. We're not born unlucky. Even if our DNA, even if we inherit a genetic tendency to something, we can allow the body to heal that. And fasting is the single most efficient and effective way to do it because what happens is it allows the body to put all of its energy or the vast majority of the energy into cleansing and healing rather than doing everything else it normally does. So when we do that, amazing things happen. And it doesn't really matter what the condition is. We could be talking about almost anything. There are cases where someone's done so much damage that the body's going to have a hard time healing. But in most cases, the body can heal when you give it a chance to. And so
with cancer, because let's say the cancer was spread all over their body, mm-hmm. would that be just like, hey, that's fasting may, you know, help, but it's probably too late versus someone who has just a small cancer starting to form?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say it this way, you know, if I was talking to the person or when, you know, when I hear from someone who says to me, in fact, I had a woman contact me. She heard me speak. I was on a lecture tour in the UK, and I heard from a young woman. She came to the evening lecture. She contacted me a week or so later and said, look, you know, I definitely want to fast with you. I can't get over to you. I guide people through the process via Skype as well as in person here at the center. There's no comparison between the two. You know, if someone can get here, I mean, we're in paradise. We have a beautiful campus on 10 acres, about to be 37 acres. We've got amazing gardens and a beautiful pool and trampoline and just beautiful spaces. It's a very nice place to be. You want to be in nature surrounded
by
it's
like a nice environment. Everybody is kind of like positive and all that. You get a positive environment, from all the BS.
Away from all the pollution and toxicity. There's no Wi-Fi. There's very little cell signal. You know, it's clean. We're surrounded by jungle, by forest here. There's very little traffic where we are. It's perfect. You know, the weather is beautiful almost all the time. I mean, we have very nice days, t-shirts and shorts every single day of the year, pretty much. And so, you know, if someone can get here, it's great. But if not, I handle it via Skype. I guide them through the process. We speak every day. And when she contacted me, she said, look, this was another case, breast cancer. She'd had her breast removed. They didn't tell her to do anything else. You know, you're done, you're clean, everything's good. And 3 years later, cancer's back, except now it's metastasized everywhere. They can't even count the number of tumors she has. They're everywhere in her body. And she said to me, can this help me? And I said, look, you know, I don't know. I mean, the more spread it is, the more difficult it is. It's possible your body can't heal this. It's possible that it can. You know, I don't know how likely it is, but frankly, what are your other options? Medicine has said there's nothing we can do for you.
Yeah.
We can't help you.
So it would have been probably better for her to have fasted 5, 10, 15 years ago and been fasting consistently, then she probably wouldn't have got to this point, right? So everyone listening needs to really research this and listen to your videos and learn these procedures so you don't get to that point in the first place.
You know, there's an old saying which I've never quoted before but pops into my mind, and that is that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So, you know, it's much better to create an amazing level of health and vitality and never have to try to heal yourself from being sick. If you get sick, it's much harder to heal than it is to never get sick in the first place.
Yeah, it's really – and I just want to say, people listening to this, I dated a nurse a couple years ago. She worked in a hospital, Western doctors, and you know what she told me? She's like, Steve, the doctors I work with, they fast. And I was like, are you serious? And she's like, yeah, they fast. But if patients go to them with a problem, they're either going to cut them open or give them a drug. They're not going to tell them go fast. So, you know, that's America for you, you know?
I have to say that, you know, after 25 years of traveling and speaking about this subject and teaching people how to heal themselves, I've been coaching people now for 26 years, and 21 years running a fasting center, I'm rarely shocked, but I'm a little shocked by what you just said, if that's true, because I'll tell you something, we frequently have people who contact us and say, you know, they'll go back and forth with questions and I'll answer all their questions, and then they'll say, okay, well, I'm just going to talk to my doctor and make sure it's okay. And as soon as I hear that, I'm like, oh, I wish you had told me that before, because every doctor always tells their people don't fast. And so if they're actually fasting themselves and they understand this, then it's really disheartening that they're lying to people because they want to sell their, you know, their medicine instead of actually trying to help people get healthy. You know, we make money from fasting people, and that's what allows the center to survive. As it happens, I don't actually take a salary from it, but that's another story. I'm interested in doing something that I think is beneficial to people. And I have to say, I live the lifestyle I choose to live. I live in the tropics. I live in shorts and flip-flops. Every day I give a lecture, which I love doing. You can probably tell I enjoy this. I love sharing with people. I get to write. I've written articles in magazines all over the world. I'm working on a couple books right now. I get to travel and speak all over the world. I've spoken in 25 or 30 countries. I have had clients here from 97 countries so far, so I literally have friends all over the world. Wherever I travel, there are people I know. And I feel like I'm doing something beneficial. We sent out a newsletter yesterday. I've heard from 20 people, and even the ones who aren't interested in coming to our festival coming up in April, a little fruit festival here, they're saying things like, hey, I just wanted to say again, thank you so much, you know, for helping me get my health back 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it is. It's a cool thing. But although people say, well, you sell fasting. Yeah, but the truth is, I walked away from a much more lucrative career to do something I truly believe in because I wanted to help people. Where medicine, unfortunately, they're often doing something that they know isn't really bringing anyone health, but it's how they pay bills. And they, you know, big bills. I mean, they make a lot of money. It's a very lucrative business. And the third leading cause of death after cancer and heart disease is doctors and medicine. Some people say it's actually, depending on how you count, it's actually the number one cause of death, even more than cancer and heart disease. But even the World Health Organization says number three. It's called iatrogenic disease, and it kills more people than anything besides cancer and heart disease. It's the mistakes of doctors and medicine. I mean, drugs themselves cause disease because all drugs are toxic. So, you know, the young guys you were thinking about, I mean, how tragic is it for a 27-year-old bodybuilder to die, 26-year-old? You know, but these guys, they make the mistake of thinking that they can take tons of steroids, which creates all kinds of problems in the body, and then use a bunch of drugs to try to resolve them without harming themselves. All drugs are toxic substances. They're not going to lead you to health. They're going to lead you to a much lower level of health. They might treat symptoms so you feel better. And this is what's confusing to people. People believe that if they're free of symptoms, they're healthy. But in fact, if you think about this, I'm not sure how true this is in the bodybuilding world, but you know, football, basketball, very commonly, you'll see even young athletes, high school, college athletes, dropping dead of a heart attack while playing their sport. These were people who were fit. They were at the top of their game, but they weren't healthy. And this happens all the time. So talking to athletes, it's important for you guys to understand that you can be strong as an ox, and you might even have a, you know, great cardio. You might be very, very fit, but that doesn't mean you're healthy. And if you want to live a long time and feel great for a long time, you need to understand that you've got to take good care of your body.
And that 26-year-old bodybuilder, after they did the autopsy, they actually found he did have cancer and he didn't even know it. So you're exactly right. We encourage, I mean, on our website, we encourage people to always take breaks. And fasting is one of the ways definitely that you need to be taking breaks, not just from all these steroids and drugs and all this stuff, which people abuse way too much. I don't believe in that. But we also need to take a break from food. And this is why having Lauren on is so important to kind of teach us this stuff.
Yeah. So there's a whole cascade of beneficial physiological changes that happen when we fast. And some of it, as I said, begins to happen within, you know, just 18 hours or so. We see amazing things happen. Now, the cool thing is, you know, if you're intermittent fasting and if you're a bodybuilder or you just want to be as healthy as possible and be fit and strong, you can work out during an 18-hour fast. In fact, the closer to the end of that time, you know, the more time you fasted, up to 18 hours or so, the more benefits you're going to get from your workout because of all the human growth hormone, you're going to build muscle more quickly and easily. So ideally, I would be working out, you know, when I work out, it would be just before my first meal of the day, which happens between 1 and 2 in the afternoon. Practically speaking, it doesn't happen that way because I'm busy every day with clients in that time. I give a lecture at 10 o'clock in the morning and then see all my clients and get vital signs between 11 and 1 o'clock. And then when I'm finished, I'll eat something. And if on the days, at least not every day, but on the days that I'm traveling to the bank or anything else, which, you know, which closes in the afternoon, I have to eat and get out of here because we're up in the mountains, you know, a long way. It's 25, 30 minutes one way to get to where I need to go. I don't have a lot of time. So I wind up working out in the morning around my calls with clients before I see my clients at 10 o'clock, which means I'm not getting the full benefit of having fasted as long as possible. But for you guys listening, you know, if bodybuilding is your thing and you want to build, then what you want to be doing is working out as close to that first meal of the day as possible. So after you've been fasting as long as you're, you know, as long as that fast is going to be, if you're fasting 18 or 20 hours, mm-hmm. then you want to be working out in that 18 to 20 hour point just before you eat.
Okay, so then after your workout, then eat, but don't eat exactly. Before. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to do the workout while you're still fasting, and then you can eat, and you still have all, you know, you've got the max amount of, because the bloodstream, what's in the bloodstream doesn't immediately change after eating. It takes some time for, you know, your body stops producing all the human growth hormone, but it's still there. It's still present. So you still get all the benefit of having it in your body by working out just before your meal. That's how you do it as late as possible to have the maximum amount of this going on, and then you can have your meal. And during that time, you're not only going to build more muscle, but because you fasted those 18 hours, your body is able to cleanse whatever garbage is in there on a surface level in real time every day. So if you're eating poorly every day, the way most people do, you're constantly creating a problem for your body to deal with. You're not going to see a lot of progress. I mean, you're going to keep up with what's there, perhaps, maybe not, but you're not going to get ahead of it. If you're eating the way that I recommend, which is, you know, it's what most people would consider radical and probably not something that's going to appeal to most bodybuilders. As I know, you know, Steve, I'm a raw vegan. I eat a fruit-based diet and have now for over 26 years, and typically eat, as I said, two meals a day. It's relatively few calories. I'm not focused on bodybuilding. I'm focused on trying to just finish all the projects I've got going on, working with 25 to 30 clients every day, working on writing, working on events and travel, and setting those things up. I don't have time to worry about bodybuilding. I'm not a bodybuilder, so I'm not concerned about that at all. What works for me is to because I've fasted quite a few times in the last 30 years, my system is now very clean and efficient. I need relatively few calories, and so I don't eat very much. I eat typically between 12 and, well, probably around 12, but, maybe up to 1,500 calories per day, a maximum on a typical day. Yeah. Obviously, for someone who's spending hours in the gym working out, if that's what you guys are doing, you're probably going to need considerably more calories than that, and that's fine. You eat what you need to. You don't want to eat more than you need to.
And that's the big problem. United States. Gosh, we're getting fatter and fatter. And, we have a listener question. He's a type 2 diabetic. Mm-hmm. And I actually published an article about diabetes. And almost 100 million Americans are pre-diabetic.
Right.
And that's a shocking number. And it's only getting more because we just are fatting, making ourselves so fat. But he wants to know about fasting. He's a diabetic. And he says if he doesn't eat anything after a few hours, he starts getting jittery with low blood sugar. So he wants to know, would he be able to fast as well?
He'd be able to fast. And, again, I wouldn't recommend. So if you're listening to this broadcast and you're reasonably healthy, there's no reason you can't fast for as many as 3 to 5 days or so on your own. I know you've done longer, Steve, but as pretty much every author who's ever written about the subject would say the same thing, which is don't go more than five. Maybe someone would have said 7 days without having experienced guidance. Honestly, it's not because people are necessarily going to do very well for up to 7 days on their own. It's that there's a limit to how much damage they can do in that length of time. But of the people we've had here over the years, and I'm talking thousands of clients, many of them fasted before, and virtually everyone says they have a much more powerful experience when they're here, with guidance than they did on their own. Because having run the largest dedicated fasting center in the world over 20 plus years now, I've sort of figured out what really works and what doesn't work. And different than, by the way, I think it's important to point out, and I don't think you've said this, I didn't say it, it might have been clear to everyone already, I think I did say, my background was in finance, economics, psychology, not medicine, not nutrition. I don't come to this as a professional. And, some people, I think, need to know that because some people aren't going to be comfortable without a professional. Now, it's important to point out, fasting is not a medical process. It's a natural process. And so what it requires is someone who understands that process and understands what's okay. When people fast with doctors, that what usually happens is their fasts are cut shorter than they need to be, because the doctors won't let them go beyond certain vital signs. As soon as their vital signs are outside of a normal range, their process is over. Unfortunately, that often means that they're not going to get the benefit that they need. So someone like the listener who wrote in with this question with type 2 diabetes, so far, there could be an exception eventually, but so far, type 2 diabetes is the other condition that we've had 100% success eliminating. So we haven't seen hundreds of people. We've seen maybe 60 or 65 type 2 diabetics over the years. Every one of them leaves here with normal blood sugar or below, with no need for medication. Gone. It's handled. It's resolved. That's what happens. And type 2 diabetes is usually relatively easy to deal with, but you have to know what you're doing. You have to know what isn't okay. So yes, you can fast. I wouldn't encourage you to do it alone. But, either come on down and spend, by the way, probably 4 weeks here. 21 days fasting would be minimum I'd recommend in that situation. And that sounds radical to most people. Let me clarify, I talked earlier about very long fasts. Even people who are not obese can typically go between 6 and 8 weeks if they know what they're doing. And we routinely fast people who are underweight because they can't put on healthy weight. Imagine, working out, eating well, and not being able to build muscle. And we see people like this all the time.
Is that from the ghrelin? Is that he increased that ghrelin? Because I notice when I come off fast and I start eating, I'm so hungry. My appetite's like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible that that's what's going on, but I don't think that's what's always going on. And to be honest with you, Steve, often what happens is when people come off their fast, I mean, they're having belly-centered symptoms that they think are hunger, which cause them to eat, but they're not hungry in the first place, or it's sort of an ego desire to eat. You know, they want to eat, and there's this craving for food, but the body doesn't really want food. So what I find here, I mean, we actually start people with very small amounts of food, initially frequent, very tiny meals, and we gradually go up because we're trying to jumpstart the apostat. The truth is that most people have no appetite to eat. They don't want to eat because what their body really wants to do is keep cleansing, and which doesn't happen if they eat. I mean, not at the same rate. So they actually don't want, their body doesn't want food, but they have to go. You know, they were only able to get 4 or 5 or 6 weeks of vacation time. Maybe that's all they could afford. You know, they've got other things they need to do. They need to go home. So we need to break their fast because they've got to get on a plane in a week or 10 days, depending on how long their fast is. But their body doesn't actually want food. So ironically, it's almost the opposite. We find here that people don't have a strong desire for food. They typically don't want it at all. I mean, they want it, but their body not so much. So we gently jumpstart the apostat. So we create an appetite over the course of the first 3 to 5 days. And then they actually feel like they want to eat. But it can usually take that long. Okay. But what's happening is, there are several things going on. The original question was, what was the question? Why is it that these people don't lose much weight, or why is it they can't gain weight?
The question that the guy sent, is that what you're talking about? The guy.
Well, no, you had said something, you know, about a question. I think I answered the guy's question. The guy can definitely fast with supervision. I would recommend, you know, if he came to me, I would say 21 days plus a week of refeeding is minimum. If you could spend 5 weeks, that would be great. You know,
your results mm-hmm. with it's like type 2 diabetics, is it just one fast and boom, 100%, or is it they have to keep doing it?
Nope. Well, it's one fast and they've resolved the issue. They can recreate the issue if they go back to making the same choices they made before. Yeah. And it's a really good point, Steve, that a lot of people seem to gloss over. Fasting is like a giant reset button. So you give your body the chance to cleanse and heal, and in most cases it will, and your body's going to function like it hasn't functioned in a long time. I mean, in some cases, you know, this session we had a guy here who's 60, a woman here in her 60s. For these people, they're likely to complete their process physiologically 15 to 20 years younger when they got here. Now, obviously, if someone's 25, they're not going to see the same percentage of change, you know, of age. Maybe a percentage, but not the same number of years. They're going to leave here feeling and functioning much better, but not 15 or 20 years younger physiologically. But amazing things happen every single time. If they continue making excellent choices, and one of the things, I mean, again, I'm totally about education. So every single day that someone's here, there's a 1-hour lecture or Q&A. I want people to leave here armed to be able to make the best choices so they can get the same results that I've had. No sickness, no problems, no overweight, you know, nothing. Everything feels and functions as well as possible. That's what's available to everyone. If someone leaves here, and when they leave, I email them a 6-week plan to follow that tells them not what to eat today at, you know, 2:00, but these are the things that belong to your body. These are the relative quantities. And this is all stuff we've already covered, but now they have it in writing to help them remember and make sure they follow the program. If they do that, they're going to continue to see amazing results, and they're not going to see a recurrence of diabetes. If they go back to eating the way they were before, which is typically excess fat, which creates insulin resistance, to some degree, I mean, obviously there's problems created by eating excess sugar as well, but most diabetes is actually the result of eating excess fat, and most people are consuming 30 to 40% of their calories from fat, where the body needs maybe 10% maximum. We don't need a lot of fat. And yet most people are eating way too much of it, 3 to 4 times more than they need, maybe more than that. And so that creates all kinds of problems. If someone's willing to make optimal choices, there will be no more diabetes. It'll be done and gone for good. as long as they continue making excellent choices. But fasting doesn't resolve anything permanently. You know, if someone leaves here and winds up spending the rest of their life eating McDonald's three times a day, they're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
No matter how long their fast is, they're going to recreate whatever problem they had before.
So one of the things, Lauren, I really like about your YouTube channel is that you're logical with the stuff you say, because you'll say something and it's like, wow, you know, you'll think of, you know, the person will think about what you're saying and it's like, wow, this makes logical sense. Like one of the things you said is that if a food is hard to get a hold of, like if you get a bag of nuts in the shell and you got to break open that nut with no tools at all, with just your bare hands, you're not going to be able to get many of them. So you're pretty much saying that foods that are hard to acquire like that are probably not things you should be eating in large quantities, right?
Exactly. Exactly right. You know, here in the tropics, we've got almond trees and macadamia trees and Brazil nut trees. These nuts, you can take two rocks, you know, do your best like you're out in nature without a nutcracker, and you'll see it takes a long time to get into these things and to get the nut out. You know, you're not going to get much food for all the labor involved. If I've got a mango tree that's literally dripping with mangoes, an orange tree, bananas, you know, I've got more than 100 varieties of fruit growing. But if I've got fruit available, why would I go to all the trouble to try to get into a nut, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes of work for one tiny nut when I've got all these sources of fruit? And the fruit's going to give me mostly carbohydrates, a little bit of protein and a little bit of fat, but mostly carbohydrates. Our bodies run on sugar. That's our natural fuel. I mean, I know there are people that are, you know, they're trying to stay in a state of ketosis. I think it's a serious mistake. That's not our natural fuel. Yes, we can do it, but I don't think there's any long-term benefits to doing it. The natural fuel for the body is glucose, and we can make glucose, but the easiest way to get it is by eating things that contain simple sugars. The difference between eating fruit and eating, you know, sugar, candy, whatever, is that fruit comes with ample water and ample fiber. Even the driest fruits like a banana are around 73 to 75% water, where most of the food that most people eat is much drier than that. You know, think about bread, crackers, cereal, cooked meat. How much water do these things have? Not very much. So when we're eating fruit, we're getting plenty of water and plenty of fiber, and so the sugar is absorbed slowly. And that means it does not create problems for us. It has a low glycemic load, which means our blood sugar doesn't go up. So even the guy listening, if you're still listening and you've got type 2 diabetes, you can probably eat most fruit with no problem. Okay.
Yeah, you just covered what I was going to ask, because like probably a lot of Western doctors will go to him and be like, no, you can't have fruit.
Exactly.
But like,
that's exactly what they tell them.
Why
most
do they
doctors.
Tell them that then?
Well, they tell them that because they don't understand what they're talking about. This, and again, I don't mean to be irreverent. Two of my favorite relatives. I have one brother. He's a doctor. One of my cousins is a doctor. They're both pediatricians, by the way. They're great guys. You know, they want to help kids. But most doctors today, graduating from the best medical schools in not just in the U.S. but in any Western country, on average have 1 3-hour lecture on nutrition.
So my clients
come here for 4 weeks. You know, we're not going to talk about nutrition the whole time. We're going to be talking about lots of things. They're going to get 30 hours of education. Probably at least half of that's going to be covering, you know, food and nutrition. They're going to wind up having learned five times more time, let's say, spent studying the subject than doctors. They simply don't know what they're talking about. And by the way, I mean, doctors have the shortest lifespan of any professional in North America. Why are we going to people about health who aren't very healthy?
Yeah. I once saw a doctor. She was like 300 pounds.
Right.
It was amazing. Yeah.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, fortunately, that's not the norm, but it happens. There was a holistic doctor when I was still living in the Washington, D.C. area. I met this woman who called herself a holistic doctor and had this medical, you know, holistic medical practice. And I met her in person. I couldn't believe she was enormous. You know, why would anybody see this person and think this person can help me get healthier? She can't get herself healthy. How's she going to get you healthy?
Yeah, we see that a lot in fitness as well. We see personal trainers who they don't know shit about this stuff. And it's like, they look like shit and they don't know nothing. They never read a book in their life and they're
right.
You're paying them money to help you get fit and they don't know shit. So what are some other myths besides what we just talked about that are so prevalent out there that our listeners should kind of, you know, look the other way on?
Well, so here's a big one. Now this one is a little tricky because your listeners are, you know, I mean, you're in the bodybuilding space, right? So, you know, there's a big myth around protein. Most people, not just body, most people believe they need to eat lots of protein because we've all grown up being brainwashed to believe this. Why would we be brainwashed? Who would benefit from having us believe this? Well, the meat and dairy industries, to name the two biggest ones, the people that sell nuts and seeds, you know, soy products, these are all high protein products, and the people that sell them to us want us to believe that we need a lot of protein. But the fact is that our bodies are completely different from the bodies of animals that eat a lot of animals, that eat a lot of protein. Our bodies cannot handle a lot of protein. In fact, I've been teaching now for 25 years that excess protein is harmful to the body. In 2013, there was finally a study published that proved exactly what I've been saying. I couldn't explain the mechanism exactly what was happening, but it just made sense to me. And sure enough, when we eat excess protein, and we need a tiny amount, we eat more than that, what happens is our telomeres, the little tails on our DNA, become shorter. And there's a direct correlation. The shorter the telomere, the shorter your lifespan. So eating more protein makes us age and die faster. Now, here's the thing. If you want to build unnaturally large muscles, you're going to have to eat more protein.
Yep.
Okay. So as a bodybuilder, I mean, honestly, and you know, I might be limiting my chances of being invited back on the show, but I'm always going to tell it as I see it. If you want to be a bodybuilder, you need to understand it's not the healthiest thing you can do.
You're right. And actually, Lauren, you'll be surprised to hear this. We've actually had, very high level IFBB bodybuilders come on this show and say that you don't need tons of protein because 10 years ago, you know, the thing was, oh, you needed 400-500 grams of protein a day. Then it's changed to like, oh, you need 250 grams. And now people are saying you only need 0.6 to 0.75 grams of protein per body weight. So a 200 pounder only needs like 120 grams of protein.
120, 125.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, things are changing. So, I mean, that's something.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing for your sport this is changing because this has been a huge problem. Now, I mean, I still think it's true that if you want to build unnaturally large muscles, you have to eat more protein. So 125 grams, I'm not eating anywhere close to that much protein per day. But I don't need it because I'm not trying to build big muscles.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I mean, here's what I'm interested in doing. And, again, I'm not a bodybuilder. Let's be clear about this. What I want to do is I want to make sure that my body works well, that I feel good, that I can do whatever I want. So I'll be 57 soon. I can body surf all day. I can rock climb and ride bikes and hike. You know, I can keep – I mean, I've got many of my students, not most of them, they're all ages from – my youngest client was 2.5. My oldest was 91. But I work with a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, and it's rare for them to be able to keep up with me, either in stamina or actually in strength, you know, per size. So I'm not very big. I'm only 147 pounds. I'm 6 feet tall, but it's mostly muscle. I've got very little body fat. I've got an overwhelming percentage of muscle in my body, which means what I'm interested in is strength to mass ratio. Because I'm not trying to win contests. I want to be able to use my body the way I want. And the stronger I am for my weight, the better I can do. You know, the more stamina I have, the more energy I have to do whatever I choose to do. That's what works for me. As a bodybuilder, obviously you're trying to build big muscles. So yes, you do need to eat a bit more protein. And that means that you got to do what you got to do. I have a client who heard me. I did a full-day seminar in Exeter, England, maybe 12 or 13 years ago, and this guy came up to me at the end of the – you guys will probably relate to this. He approached me at the end of the seminar and said, Lauren, that was great. I have something I want to give you. And he hands me an 8x10 glossy photo of himself practically nude. He's got like a little, you know, little bathing suit on sort of thing. And I looked at the picture and I said, you know, thank you, but I prefer women. You know, I this guy's yeah. coming on to me or what, right? Yeah. And he said, no. I said, I was kidding, really. But he said, I'm a bodybuilder, and I wanted you to know I'm a vegan bodybuilder, and I wanted you to know it's possible to be strong and fit and compete. He'd actually had won a second place in England, national competition, as a vegan. And over the next few years, as a result of my seminar and you know working with him, he converted to a raw vegan bodybuilder. In order to do that, which means there's a lot of sources of protein that you no longer have access to if you're not eating cooked food, beans and soy products, etc. So what he did was he ate lots more nuts and seeds than I would normally recommend. And he did this understanding that it really, really wasn't optimal. But he was committed to bodybuilding. It's what he wanted to do. And he knew that it wasn't going to be the healthiest thing, but it's what he wanted. So he was consciously making a compromise. I have no problem with that. I hate to see people making mistakes by believing something that's not true. You know, if you understand that, okay, you know, this sport, I love the sport. It's what I really enjoy doing. It's not the healthiest thing for me, but I like it. I'm going to do it anyway. Hey, that's perfectly fine. God bless you. You know, do whatever you want to do. It's fine, right? I just think it's, you know, you asked about myths, and most people still believe that we need a lot of protein. We simply do not. So bodybuilders may be one of the exceptions. You're going to have to get a bit more. But even there, you know, as you said, it's clear. It's become increasingly clear. And the sport, thank God, is embracing this, that it's not as much as people used to think it is.
No. I mean, we've seen studies come out and people have realized it through their own experiences that, I mean, I don't consume that much protein. Right. And I used to. I used to believe in that crap and all I did was just get fat. Seriously, all I did was just get fat. I didn't even, right. I got big muscles, I got stronger, but I also got fat. I mean, that's, you eat more, you're going to get fat. So,
yeah. You know. Well, I mean, you know, the calorie thing, it doesn't, calories aren't exactly calories. I mean, the whole way we think about the energy in food isn't exactly right. It's not a completely accurate way to look at it. However, it's a pretty good shorthand. And so if you're eating an excess number of calories, you're going to put on weight, bottom line, right? Doesn't matter what those calories are from. It's going to be a problem for you if you're taking in more than you need to. So better not to do that.
So I have one more question before we close up. I'll let you close up with any final thoughts. But what about drinking? Is water, are you just a water drinker, or do you even drink coffee, tea, anything like that? Because we hear all the time, I have friends from like Asia and stuff. They're like, oh, we drink tea every day in our culture. It's healthy, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely not healthy. However, it's certainly healthier than sodas and energy drinks, you know, and sports drinks and alcohol and a lot of other things that people drink. And coffee, it's healthier than coffee because they have a lot of the same nasty chemicals, but less of them. And so, you know, everything's relative. And this is an important message. I'll come to your question, but in terms of closing up for me, you know, I want people to understand everything's relative because a lot of people find a diet, for instance, or lifestyle choice that they make a change, they get much healthier, and they think they found the holy grail because everything got better. And what people want to realize and completely understand is that your body, every body, each organism is always attempting to take itself to the highest level of health and vitality possible. And what that means is that as soon as we improve anything, so let's say that you're out there trying to make things happen, Steve. You're relatively new, I think, to bodybuilding in the last couple of years. Am I right?
No. I've been doing it since I was a teenager. So
okay,
it's over 20
I apologize.
Years. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know where I got that idea from, but...
No, I was new to fasting over the past couple of years.
Okay.
Fasting fair is what it is.
In any case, you know, it doesn't really matter what the thing that we're talking about is. I guess the bottom line is we want to understand, first of all, there's always more to learn, whatever we're doing. But let's say that you're out there, you're working hard, you're bodybuilding, I'm guessing you're not making a living, so you're probably doing something else as well with your time. You know, you're doing this program. You've got a lot of things going on, right? And so maybe you're not getting enough sleep. And that's going to limit your success both in building muscle as well as in creating the highest level of health you like. And so you think, well, okay, I'm only getting 4 hours of sleep every night. I mean, I literally had a client here, amazing guy, one of the top 30 entrepreneurs, you know, named top 30 entrepreneurs under 30 in Australia last year. An amazing guy. What he's been able to accomplish. He started as an entrepreneur when he was like 12. And, you know, now he's just turned 30 or 31, I think. He just turned 31. It's amazing what this guy's accomplished. He and his brother have accomplished in you know, their short, relatively short lives so far. It's incredible. But one of them is only literally getting an average of like 2 hours of sleep a night. Well, that's not going to work. He got here and he's like, but I feel fine. I do perfectly fine that way. Well, he got here, started fasting. Guess what? He slept like 22 hours. So his body just needed to crash because it had been running on so little. So, you know, if that guy went from 2 hours of sleep a night to 4 hours of sleep a night, he would probably get much better results. And he might think, well, that's all I need. I changed to 4 hours. I'm doing much better. Obviously, it's enough sleep for me, but that's not true. It's a fallacy. We want to understand that everything is relative. So, you know, one of the things I've done over the nearly 40 some years I focused on nutrition and health now is try to understand what's truly optimal. Because yes, we can get better results by making improvements, but I want the people that come to me to understand what optimal is, just in case that's what they want for themselves. If they want to feel and function as well as they possibly can, they have to understand what the optimal thing is, or they're never going to be able to achieve optimal results, right? So coming back to your question, I drink primarily water when I need to drink. Ironically, I don't drink very much at all because I've gotten my body clean and I eat a high water content diet. So most of what I eat is watermelon, papaya, mangoes, pineapples, salads, you know, lettuce, tomatoes, things like that. Most of the foods I eat are 90% water roughly or more. Because of that, I stay hydrated. Most people get dehydrated because they're eating foods that don't contain much water. And even if they change to a diet like mine, they're not going to get hydrated until they get all the old garbage out of the body via fasting. It's the only way to, and fasting properly. I have, out of the 25 or 6 people that have been here at the session so far in the last 4 or 5 weeks we've been open, several of those people have fasted before. None of them ever eliminated any old hard material before, any old, you know, fecal matter. Everybody eliminates it here. Everybody. Without exception, thousands of people over 21 years. And they come to us from other fastings. They fasted somewhere else. It didn't happen to them. They fasted on their own. It didn't happen to them. Why not? They weren't doing what they needed to do. They were making some mistakes. But as long as you know, the body is truly clean and we're eating an optimal diet, we won't need to drink much. When I do drink, it's generally only water. The only exceptions are I might occasionally have a fresh juice, not a bottled thing, but something fresh, or like a smoothie. But it's not a habit. I don't do it thinking it's the healthiest thing. I'm completely clear that the optimal thing to do is to eat whole foods. So my meals are typically whole foods, fruits, usually one fruit at a time, or very simple green salads. And that's what I've done now for 26 years. Every once in a while, I'll have a juice or a smoothie, but usually it's or like a coconut water, something like that. You know, we have fresh coconuts here. Okay. They're pretty good. That's nice sometimes too.
Yeah, I have them too. I'm in Florida, so they sometimes they fall off the trees and stuff. So I grab some. Right.
Where in Florida are you?
South Florida, the Palm Beach County.
Okay. Well, you know, I get to South Florida at least once or twice a year. I've actually been awesome. In Miami, Fort Lauderdale, I think 4 times in the last year.
Yeah, it's definitely an awesome area. So yeah, man. I mean, awesome. Listen, you know, we really appreciate you coming on. It was a wealth of knowledge. I think a lot of guys are going to learn a lot from this. Tell them you have Skype. You do a Skype service, and you also have your website, and you have your wellness center. Can you tell people how to find you?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, you can go to www.tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com. For those of you that are English speakers from somewhere else, it's the American, not the English spelling, so center. So it's C-E-N-T-E-R, tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com. You can go there. On the homepage, there's a video that you can follow back to my YouTube channel. You can email me from the website. So that's probably going to be, you know, the best source of information, the best way to reach out to me. I'm glad to answer questions. you know, quick questions. I do Skype consultations. So if you want to spend an hour with me on the phone or Skype, we can make that happen. And as far as fasting is concerned, I guide people through the process both here at the center as well as via Skype. I'm happy to work with you. I'm completely committed to helping you take your health to the highest level you've ever experienced. And I guarantee you it's possible if you're willing to do what you need to do. Steve, it's been a real pleasure being here with you again.
All right, buddy. We appreciate getting you back. Everybody, evolution.org raw podcast. We will talk to you guys next time. Thank you.